City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Welcome to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 360. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Chaka Khan.
Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan.
Chaka Corn. Kelly Simpkins.
You are Kelly Simpkins. Hi, Kelly Simpkins.
Hi, Amy.
Bunnies are in the yard.
Well,
we always have bunnies. We always have bunnies in the yard.
For the most part.
We have them winter, spring, summer, fall.
All you got to do is call.
No, come on.
The bunnies will be here. Yeah. You got a bunny, honey.
We've not really come back from Mexico, have we?
I think we have.
Have we?
Damn the luck, but I think we have.
I guess we are back. It's true. The dog's happy we're back.
Thrilled.
We're happy we're back. Somewhat.
We're okay happy.
We're okay. We're not suicidal.
That's good. Well, I was.
Yeah, that's true. It's true indeed. Man, I mean, so much happened, it felt like, when we were out of town.
People
coming out all over the place and just relationships failing. And first of all,
humans failing, not relationships failing.
Humans
potentially,
failing.
Right?
Potentially. Well, we'll see. The world may just be writing itself, too. So Ricky Martin came out, finally.
Shocker.
So cute. I wish he'd come out a decade ago, but whatever, you know.
He didn't want to say. Remember when Barbara asked him, he's like, I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand.
He didn't want to be defined
wanna.
By that.
I don't want to.
But it's a very macho culture that he comes from.
Macho.
Well, we were just in it.
It's a macho-nacho culture.
But, you know, he finally came out on some Twitter or blog. I mean, he did it in a very unassuming, very small, kind of quiet way. Of course, it didn't take much in this day and age for that to become a huge
Who wants to
ripple.
Blog out? I mean, really? Do you just want to blog out?
I don't know. I guess that's the way you can do it today.
I guess it is.
Didn't Meredith Baxter Burney do it almost the same way? I mean, everybody just kind of subtly lets it out. Nobody has the big cover spread anymore unless you're Sean Hayes coming out in The Advocate in April, which, once again, shocker. Like we didn't
I think
know.
Everyone should do it on TV like Ellen did.
Yeah.
Yes. In I think middle. Laura Dern should be there for everybody's. Yeah. And I think...
On a loudspeaker. Yeah. I agree. I don't know. I mean...
I don't know either. Part of me
I mean, Sean Hayes said he'd never been in. You said.
That's true. I think that's what I read over someone's shoulder at a...
Which is hilarious because...
He's like, I was never in!
Billy's Hollywood Big Screen Kiss or whatever that film he was made, he was on Lesbian Gay Radio. And let me tell you, he wasn't in then, but then somehow he wasn't out after
well,
that.
Well, they feel like so once... Strange. If they don't deny it, if they never say, I'm not gay, then they're not really not out. Then
yeah.
they're... Which I think, I mean, on some level I understand. It's not like you've ever said no.
Right. Well, the gays...
You just have never really publicly said yes.
Yeah.
You just refuse to talk about your private life.
Right.
Which well, I guess is your right, but if you're gay, it's like Harvey Milk said, you must come out. You must. You must.
You must. You must.
And well, it's scary and it's hard and it fucking sucks and it shouldn't be anybody's business, really, if you're in the public eye.
I don't think it fucking sucks. You think it fucking sucks to come out? I'm just asking you.
No, I'm saying that a lot of... I think the projection
You mean for
is,
celebrities? You mean for big...
I think... I don't know. I just feel like it's such a huge, potentially career kind of cataclysmic move that people think... People think that it's going to be that kind of thing. And Ellen even said, you know, people have said, I didn't work for years.
Yeah.
So I think it's... The sucky thing is that once you come... That's what I meant. The sucky thing is that if you're a celebrity and one and you come out... Then suddenly people don't see you in the same... They don't see you in the straight roles. Not that they probably ever did with him.
Because Sean Hayes or Ricky Martin. Nobody
or
was...
Ricky Martin or Ellen, for that
Although...
matter. But there are some people who I think might... You know, I don't know. Who the assumption is that they come out, their career is going to be really marginalized as a result of that. And they're not going to get to play the roles that they would have gotten to play had people not known or... had the perception been a lot looser.
I mean, I guess the thing is, like, Rupert Everett is, like, the only one who's still crying the song that, like, his career went down the toilet after he came out. But, you know, he was always playing the fop or the villain or the sidekick. He was never really playing leading man. You know, but everybody else, I feel like, you know, from T.R. Knight to Neil Patrick Harris, to Portia de Rossi, I don't feel like these people then just play like stereotypical gay or lesbian roles. I mean, Ellen's not an actress, so, I mean,
well,
really.
Well, true.
I mean, she was dabbling in having an acting career, and Rosie's not either, so, I mean, for singers, I don't understand why it matters, because, you know...
Well, maybe they think then the opposite sex population is not going to oogle and ogle over them and not going to buy their records. I don't know.
Yeah.
And yes, sometimes it does suck. It's scary to come out. It's wonderful and it's joyful, and I think it should always be done in a positive light, like happiness. I'm happy to be out as opposed to, my God, I have the hugest thing in the world. Let's sit down and let me tell you the most awful thing that has ever happened in my life. I didn't come out that way.
Yeah.
But I think it's still scary.
I guess the thing I think is that, like, we as gay people still oogle and ogle straight people.
Sure,
so why would straight people not oogle and ogle still hot gay people? I mean, don't you think the women of Latin America?
Well, I think they should.
The women of Latin America, who's still, you know, he is a super celebrity in Latin-speaking countries, Ricky Martin. I mean, he is not that anymore here, but he is a really hyper celeb guy. In
is
Spanish,
he?
Yes, he really is.
Is he? Okay.
And you know, I think they'll still think he's
You've
hot.
You've been listening to Telemundo.
I don't know Telemundo.
We're watching Tiger Beat. What are we doing here?
I don't know.
Oh, single lady. That's what I'm doing.
I'm so excited this week. The kids from Glee are going to be on. Speaking of the gays, the kids of Glee are going to be on.
I love being
Oprah.
Gay. I just want to say that. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I do think people should come out because I think it just takes the. I certainly don't think it's sucky or shitty. I think
no,
it's scary.
No,
sometimes.
But I think everybody has a different experience. I think your coming out process was a lot harder than mine. Like me, I felt like I had just discovered the new world. I was like bouncing off the walls and telling everybody and running to drag bars. I was like so excited about it. Now, I hadn't told my parents
yet. Well, once it took hold. I mean, it took a couple years for me to, like, you know, to have it take where I felt like, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Your mind.
And I was in New York. I wasn't still in Indiana.
But your experience with, I mean, I just think everybody's different.
It was different.
And a lot, I think more people have your experience than have my experience. I mean, definitely a lot of people I know were not jumping for joy that they were gay.
I was pretty militant when I came out, though. I was like, I'm gay and you're going to like it.
Yes, but that's different than being really happy about it.
I was happy, too. I didn't have a tone like that.
I don't know. I've seen the pictures. I've seen the face. I've seen the haircut. I believe you were a little angry and a little militant about it.
No, my hair was not... buzz like that when I came out, just so you know. That was later.
It was a little like, don't approach me, I'm a dyke.
That is no.
It's okay, and there's a place for that too, but I was kind of skippity-doo-dah down the path, you know, gay. I was like the definition of gay in the Noel Coward era of gay. I was really happy.
No, I wasn't that.
I was like singing disco songs and hanging out with the gay boys.
No. I wasn't, I was
But I was a drag queen lesbian, so what can I say?
It's true. You have the pinky pointed, and I was, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, let's move on to
the kids of Glee are going to be on Oprah. So excited this week. So everybody, TiVo your Oprah this week. I can't remember what day it is. I think it's on Thursday. And I love them. And I can't wait for it to come back on. Super, super excited about that. The big fallout, I feel like, that really just happened was what happened to Sandra Bullock, while we were gone to Mexico.
I think you should never say Sandy Bullock.
I like Sandy Bullock.
You don't know her well
close.
Enough to say
you
Sandy.
You have no idea. We're Southern girls. Man, this guy is like on the most hated list now in America. I mean, he's kind of like you just fucked over like the sweetest girl in America and the girl that so many guys would want to
woman.
Be with.
She's a woman, honey.
Woman. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I called him a guy.
Guy doesn't.
Guy and girl.
Boy.
Oh, well, boy doesn't.
Girl.
Okay, whatever.
Anyway,
all
right. Let's not get lost.
Woman. Sophisticated woman. I don't think of her. Nella. No. So, Sandra Bullock, this was the big story. The big story is that Jesse James stepped down on her with some Nazi tattooed lovin'.
She does not have a Nazi tattoo. She has tattoos, you said, and had a Nazi armband on in one photograph.
I believe she has a white power initials on the backs of her arms is what some... I don't read those rags, but you made me pick them up when we were in the airport. We were like, oh my God, what's happening to Sandra Bullock? Why are those things devastating to you? They really upset you. You like rush to the magazine stands. Not over everything.
I hardly ever read those kind of magazines.
So what was it about this story that got you?
You know what? I have not even read anything about it. I haven't read anything. I just saw the things and just looked at the pictures. I just feel like it's... You know what somebody said, which I think is so true? It was that moment in time that everybody yearns for where... Your career is at its highest success. Mm-hmm. Your relationship seems like blissfully even and wonderful. And she seemed to have it all. Mm-hmm. And I think for everyone outside looking into that picture, that kind of pristine picture, that moment where all is exactly right, that we then on, you know, us lay people then kind of think to ourselves, perhaps I too could have it all. That it's possible. Mm-hmm. That moment is possible where you could have personal and professional success in the greatest possible way. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't to be. And I think it just hit this kind of like, God, see, no one can ever achieve that, I guess, is what. And she's so fucking sweet, seemingly. She's so sweet.
She's just real.
Funny, and I don't even mean saccharine sweet. Yeah. I just mean she seems like a good old girl that you could go have, you know, a night with and laugh and have a great time with and who is down to earth, who is talented, who is not like the most talented in the world, but certainly doesn't even
think so. Well, she won an Oscar.
She did.
A lot of talented people haven't done that.
She did, but she even claims who she is, you know? Do I deserve this kind of thing? I just liked her.
Yeah.
And she really gave him a lot of props.
God, she really just held him up.
Trophy season of he made this possible for me, and to know that he had fucked her around and he was there smiling and crying. No wonder he was crying.
Yeah, no wonder.
Felt like the biggest fucking dickhead on the planet. I mean,
you're right.
Cock.
You know, here's the
Sorry, that's awful.
No, I love it. That's what I love about you. Just how you say cock. That's really all I love about you, but it keeps me around year after year. No, it doesn't. No, but I hope that this is the thing. I'm just going to say it. I hope that a woman will stop giving the man propers for him completing her in that Jerry Maguire way, which she kind of did throughout. And even though it seemed romantic, and even though it seemed like I identify with everything you're saying, it still kind of seemed like the other person, and I don't even mean a man, just the other person had to be the one to help me get there. And you know what? I think
Sean Penn said that in one of his acceptance speeches about Robin Wright when he accepted for Mystic River. He said something
yes,
like,
but
this
he's
is
the
possible.
Jesse James in this relationship, and she's the Sandra Bullock. Now, if Jesse James had said it, it might be one thing. But let me not say that Sandra Bullock was not off on the deep end and needed some sort of salvation. I mean, did she need somebody to kind of, like, put a little lift in her step? I'm sure she did, because he must be monstrously good in bed or something. I don't know. But, you know, I just think that I wish she had... I guess the thing that I think in hindsight.
I don't think it's weak to claim that somebody else has made you a better. Has,
we all make each other better people if we're
open. Your heart in a way that opened. Who, yeah. Who has increased your talent by letting you be who you exactly who you are.
Right, but it took away somehow, like her, and I think people kept saying that to her. It took away her dedication. Her intelligence, her year after year, her very long career, you know, of getting to that place, picking some smart projects, not just doing every show for a buck, you know, every film that she could do, stepping back and producing, moving back to where she felt fed, you know, living in Texas. You know, there were some things she did right before he even came along. And, you know, I don't know what the whole tenor of that relationship is. If he does have a sex addiction, then she's got her own thing that kind of needs to be close to him. That's what I know, you know, but or his kind of energy. I mean, he could not have been in many ways more opposite than her. And, you know, I mean, opposites attract, but it doesn't mean they're always going to have a long sustaining relationship.
And, I mean, the question is, why do we care so much? We don't know these fucking people.
Well, I think what we care about is we hate to see her being publicly, you know, publicly... What's the word? I mean, in that kind of public lie.
Humiliated, I think is what the word is.
I don't think that she needs to be humiliated. I mean,
I'm not saying she does,
wrong.
But
he
to
does.
Find out in a public way that your person has been stepping out on you for a
well,
year.
Well, she knew
and
the
you...
day before it came out because she moved out the day before it came out. And he started apologizing and saying everything that's coming to me. This is according to Entertainment Weekly, the weekly Bible of Amy Matheny for the entertainment
wow.
world.
Wow, that's sad, Amy. It really
it's
is.
Not either. It's very smartly written. As you know from the Oprah Bullseye comment that you
Hippopotamus!
Hippopotamus!
They said when she was... Oh, God.
Oprah on the Discovery Channel.
When she
Channel.
Was doing the voiceover for the Earth program, then... They were shocked that she didn't go, hippopotamus! Oh, that will forever make me chuckle.
So see, that's why we're Entertainment Weekly.
I loved that one.
Okay, well, Entertainment Weekly said that he was already apologizing beforehand and saying that... that, you know, he was going to deserve everything that was going to come to him. And yet they didn't know what it was. And that she had already started to leave the day before. And then it all came out.
He was apologizing to whom?
I don't know. I don't know. But he had already started making comments before everybody knew what it was.
All I have to say is, I hope... The ass is worth it that he got. I mean, I really, for everyone who's out there cheating, and trust me, I've cheated before. But I hope... The tail
it's
is
never
worth
about
the pain.
The tail.
It's never well.
It's never about the tail.
Well,
but
it is the
not.
Tail. At the end of the day, it's about your power. It's about your whatever it's about.
But it's not
I hope
about
the moment. That's what it is. They're not meeting and having you know massive.
I
wonderful...
understand, but it's not why he steps out. It's not why. It's not why.
Well, I'm not a licensed therapist here, Amy. I don't have.
I'm not either.
Out. So I why mean, is it then? Let's.
Well, I just mean this is obviously a pattern. Three other women have come forward. It's not just this one hot woman that he met. And he
oh,
had a
three
10
other
month
women
of...
have come forward.
Yes,
what did they said. See, I haven't
I mean,
read any
like
of this.
It's like Tiger Woods. I mean, you know, it's not like just one woman that he kind of fell for. I mean, that would be a whole
three
different deal.
Three other women
deal.
At the time that he married to Sandra came forward.
I think so. Yes.
Wow.
So it's not a pretty scene.
Oh, good Lord.
And I think Tiger Woods is probably sending him a little bit of money just for taking the heat off.
Oh, honey, that's somebody else's. You just took that from somebody and claimed that as your own.
Hey, but who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
What'd they say,
Tiger? I'm not inviting you on my show anymore.
Because I bust you?
Don't bust me.
Oh,
don't bust
sorry,
my good
honey.
Material.
Okay.
Even the great comedy people have writers. Come
that's
on.
True. I'll say it again, and I will say nothing.
No, you've already ruined it.
Tiger Woods should be sending him a bouquet for taking the heat
off. Judy Gold's probably got some good material. I bet she writes all her own material.
I will say this,
Judy anything.
Gold, because if Judy Gold is listening, not that she really cares, but the week that I moved to New York City when I was 20 years old, yep. I went to a comedy club on the Upper West Side because it was the closest comedy club that that I could find, and yep. Judy Gold was the headliner, and at this tiny, tiny club, and she had that little curly Q on her forehead, and I thought, here's a tall, she had a little curly Q like that Ben Around the World and I woman. Who's that woman?
I can't find my
Lisa
baby.
Stansfield? Yeah, she had them around her little ears, and
really?
Judy Gold had like a little curly Q that went on her forehead, and she did stand-up comedy, and she was tall and very,
I shared
very funny.
With her that I like the tall women.
Very
I shared
funny.
With her that you were 6'1".
Excellent.
She's 6'3". She has a size 12 foot.
Wow.
Yeah. I said you almost had a size 12.
I do not. I have 11 proper.
And a half.
I have an 11 proper.
Okay, an 11 proper. Judy, did you hear that? Judy, can you hear me? So anyhow, Judy Gold's on the show. She's hysterical, and
she is very funny.
She's lesbian. She's Jewish. It's just a recipe for comedy right there. And she's on the show first time ever in all my years of interviewing people. I've never interviewed Judy Gold. I cannot believe it.
Why is she on the program?
I said, well, she's coming to Chicago to
Excellent.
Zany's. She'll be at in Chicago late April, and also
Zany's
Comedy Club, and also in Vernon Hills. It's really big. Club, and it'd be very cool. It should be in the suburbs and the city for those of you listening. So also Richard Knight Jr. taking us to a night at the movies. Still some hot movies coming out in the theater. Well, hot bodies. We'll see if they're hot movies. And what's going on in the news and in the theater scene. So Judy Gold with us here on the Queercast.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite, and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. A new study shows that approximately one out of every 7 gay men in Washington, D.C. has HIV. More than 40% did not know their status before the research, and about 1 in 3 men did not know their last partner's status. However, the figures are even more stunning in other cities such as Baltimore, where 40% of the gay men are HIV positive.
Fox News figure Bill O'Reilly has offered to pay almost $17,000 in costs an appeals court ordered Albert Snyder to pay Westboro Baptist Church minister Fred Phelps. Snyder is the father of slain Marine Matthew Snyder, whose funeral was picketed by the church. The Supreme Court is slated to hear the free speech case in October.
In New York, the advocacy organization Make the Road New York has released a report, Transgender Need Not Apply, which reveals that 42% of trans job seekers face discrimination.
In Oklahoma, Keith Kimmel, the 28-year-old man who filed a lawsuit against the Oklahoma Tax Commission seeking the I'm Gay license plate, was found dead in his apartment in Norman on March 31st. Just 2 days earlier, Kimmel had complained that Tulsa police officers assaulted him outside the gay night spot, the End Up Club, on March 27th. The internal investigation will speed up because of Kimmel's death.
In New York City, authorities are investigating the murder of trans woman Amanda Gonzalez-Andujar, whose body was found in a Queens apartment. Gonzalez-Andujar, who was 29, was strangled, and the medical examiner concluded her death was a homicide. Originally, police had identified the victim as a man, but later corrected themselves, saying she was a trans woman who had not yet gone through gender reassignment surgery. It was not immediately known if gender identity factored in the killing.
In Virginia, the Board of Visitors of George Mason University has decided to keep the school's non-discrimination policy, which includes sexual orientation, in place. The board met in response to the Virginia Attorney General's recent letter asking the state's colleges and universities to reconsider including gays and lesbians in their anti-discrimination policies.
In Texas, Travis County District Judge Scott Jenkins has refused State Attorney General Greg Abbott's attempt to interfere in a same-sex divorce case. Angelique Naylor and Sabina Daly married in 2004 in Massachusetts. They then returned to Austin, Texas, and adopted a son. Jenkins noted that Abbott is already involved in a same-sex divorce case with two men in Dallas that could provide a legal precedent, and that a delay in the lesbian's case could affect their son.
U.S. Senator Al Franken recently met with the heads of several Minnesota pro-GLBT groups, and they gave him high marks for his work on GLBT issues. They lauded his support of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and the Student Non-Discrimination Act, among other things.
In Iowa, social conservatives criticized the first anniversary of the state Supreme Court's April 3rd decision legalizing same-sex marriage. Gay activists held a number of events to mark the first anniversary, including a gala in Des Moines.
In Georgia, the state house has passed a controversial measure that would make school officials notify parents when their children are either the victims or perpetrators of bullying. The bill originated because of the death of 11-year-old Jaheim Herrera, who reportedly committed suicide after classmates taunted him with anti-gay insults.
South African runner Caster Semenya has announced that she is returning to athletic competition. Semenya has not competed or spoken publicly since winning the women's 800 at the Berlin World Championships last August, when her dramatic results and her physique led the International Association of Athletics Federations to order her to take a gender test. Race organizers are not certain if they will let Semenya run, if the IAAF has not granted permission for her to do so.
A gay couple, British Labour Minister for Europe Chris Bryant and Jared Craney, made history by holding a civil union ceremony at the British House of Parliament in Westminster. Civil unions for same-sex couples were legalized in England in 2004.
In India, police have persuaded a gay couple to dissolve their groundbreaking marriage. The couple held a small ceremony on March 25th in the state of Manipur to formalize their six-year relationship. The families of both men allegedly complained to local police about the union, and the officers reportedly detained the men for several hours, eventually convincing them to divorce.
In England, a man jailed for attacking his ex-partner with a hammer threatened him from jail. Stephen Kelly, age 20, was sentenced to 6 years in prison last year for attempting to kill his former lover, 56-year-old Paul Coombs. Along with the aforementioned threats, Kelly, who has a personality disorder, threatened to behead Coombs and send the head to Coombs' mother.
In entertainment news, rumors have been flying that Jillian Michaels of TV's The Biggest Loser has been dating sexy actress Vanessa Marcil of General Hospital and the TV drama Las Vegas. However, Michaels denied the rumor, saying, "Vanessa and I are best friends, have been for 7 years. She is getting married in April, and I am her maid of honor. We are not and have never hooked up. Sorry to disappoint."
True Blood actress Anna Paquin has come out as bisexual, saying, "I'm bisexual and I give a damn," in a new public service announcement for the Give a Damn campaign, which promotes GLBT equality. Other celebrities featured in the campaign include Sir Elton John, Kelly Osbourne, and Wanda Sykes. Paquin, who won an Oscar at age 11 for her role in The Piano, is currently engaged to True Blood co-star Stephen Moyer.
Israel Luna, the director of the controversial film Ticked Off Trannies with Knives, said that he will change the trailer so that the real hate crimes victims are not included. Luna said that the injustices done to trans individuals such as Angie Zapata and Jorge Mercado inspired him to make the movie. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation urged the upcoming Tribeca Film Festival to pull the film.
Chaz Bono has asked a judge to formally change his gender and name. TMZ.com obtained copies of court documents in which a doctor affirmed that he performed an irreversible surgical procedure for the purpose of altering Chaz Bono's sex characteristics from female to male. The documents show his new name as Chaz Salvatore Bono.
Singer Ricky Martin said that he is feeling stronger than ever after coming out. Martin announced his sexual orientation on his official website on March 29th. Glad congratulated Martin on his honesty, while gay internet gossip maven Paris Hilton wrote, "Finally, we're very happy for you, Ricky."
Figure skater Johnny Weir has stoked rumors surrounding fellow skater and Dancing with the Stars contestant Evan Lysacek and his sexual orientation. Talking with Chelsea Handler on the show Chelsea Lately, Weir not only said that he and Lysacek don't get along, although he congratulated Lysacek on winning the gold medal in the recent Winter Olympics, but winked when Handler referred to skater Tanith Belbin as Lysacek's ex-girlfriend, with Handler using air quotes.
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned by another woman. Or so goes the subtext of Chloe, director Adam Egoyan's latest sexual thriller, which features Julianne Moore, Liam Neeson, and Amanda Seyfried in a sort of lesbian variation on the usual cheating husband, jealous wife, fetching mistress triangle. The result is par for the course for Egoyan, who has been doing his best to turn on audiences since his 1994 breakthrough, Exotica. Seyfried plays Chloe, the shapely, mysterious blonde goddess, a prostitute with a thing for fantasy. Moore plays Catherine, an uptight gynecologist who suspects her college professor husband, David, played by Neeson, is playing around with one or many of his willing female students. After a chance meeting with Chloe at a restaurant, Catherine hires her to find out if her instincts are right, and soon she finds herself inexplicably drawn to the Lolita-like beauty herself, and is in over her head. And yes, that kiss you read so much about between the two women leads to a sensual tryst that the L in LGBT moviegoers will definitely appreciate. All this, as expected, places us in typical Egoyan country, exploring the sexual tensions and hidden kinks of the lead characters. But in casting Alicia Seyfried, who expands her range from Mamma Mia and Dear John, a sort of lesbian nymphant variation on the Glenn Close character in Fatal Attraction, which is in itself a refreshing twist, and more, a fearless as usual, as the older, experienced female, the script touches on the rarely explored area of female eroticism from a woman's point of view. This perspective helps elevate Chloe from Egoyan's usual sexy thriller, as does a nice last-act twist, into something a tad more insightful. The filmmaker having discovered, apparently, that a little female philosophy along with the fishnets never hurt anyone. So would maybe some diction lessons for me. Richard Knight Jr., who can't talk as usual. That's your Night at the Movies Minute.
You want to learn to play tennis in no time? Chicago's Midtown Tennis Club has the country's only patented tennis teaching program to turn beginners into players in just 3 short weeks, with sessions beginning May 1st. During Tennis in No Time, participants will learn the basics, including the forehand, backhand, and serve in a fun group atmosphere. Best of all, Tennis in No Time is affordable, even in today's economic climate. Enrollment costs $115 and includes a 3-week membership to the Midtown Tennis Club, 2 social parties, and 9 hours of instruction from the country's best pros for only $115. That's less than $20 for each hour and a half lesson. Midtown Tennis Club is located in the heart of Chicago's Lincoln Park at 2020 West Fullerton Avenue. For more information on Tennis in No Time, visit midtown.com/Chicago.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of April 5th, 2010, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Chicago Opera Theater's 2010 Spring Festival season begins in a few short weeks at the Harris Theater. Rossini's haunting Moses in Egypt opens the season on April 17th, followed by Cavalli's Jason, an early opera masterpiece with a James Bond update. Closing the 2010 season is Jake Heggie's touching 3 Decembers, starring the legendary Frederica von Stade. Join us for a VIP package night out at the opera on May 14th. Tickets are available at chicagooperatheater.org.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raised the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical Million Dollar Quartet. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
Remy Bumpo Theater presents Christopher Hampton's seductive drama Les Liaisons Dangereuses, playing now through May 2nd at the Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. Set in the salons and boudoirs of pre-revolutionary France, 2 high-powered friends devise a game to test their skills as rapacious lovers. For more information, visit RemyBumpo.org.
Get the latest highlights about Chicago's vibrant dance scene on seechicagodance.com. Enjoy exclusive discounted ticket offers, reviews, and behind-the-scenes articles by dance critics Sid Smith and Laura Mulzon, audience member reviews, a dance performance calendar, and much more. Visit seechicagodance.com today for all the latest. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi, this is Candace Kane, and I'd like to say gorgeous, and thanks a lot for listening to Windy City Queercast.
Has been an outspoken and proud member of our community for years. Whether you've seen her on Logo or Comedy Central or her appearances on The View or even Rosie O'Donnell's documentary on HBO, All Aboard, Judy always represents and brings the funny. She's a Cable Ace Award, GLAAD Media, and Emmy Award winner, and she's coming to Chicago. That's right. She's going to be at Zany's in Chicago and Vernon Hills later on this month of April, and I'm thrilled to have her on the Queercast for the very first time. Hey, Judy, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm really good. Yeah, it's so good to have you here. It's a gorgeous day in Chicago. So
you know, it's a gorgeous day here in New York City as well.
Yeah, we're lucky. We've earned these days because you all had a pretty.
You get our weather before we get our weather.
It's true. It's true. But we're getting it simultaneously today.
Yeah,
so
it's so great. You know, and you know, it's just going to go to crap in, you know, in a couple days.
Yeah. You guys have had a hard winter. Everybody always abuses us Chicagoans, but man, you all have had it harder this year.
I got to tell you, not only was it hard, it was depressing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everyone I know had that sad disease.
Mm-hmm.
It was really depressing. And there was a lot of snow and a lot of rain and a lot of miserable people. And when people are miserable in New York, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And hard to get them laughing, probably.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, tell me, who were the people that got you laughing early in your life? Were there just funny women and men in your childhood, or was it more the idols and icons that you looked up to?
Well, my family did not communicate. You know, we communicated in this. We never talked about our feelings, right? So we always were sarcastic and kind of nasty to each other and just making jokes. That was the only way we could get through anything, was to make a joke. So the default setting in my house was sarcasm.
Was that because life was hard, or was that just the tenor of the family?
That was the tenor of the family.
Okay.
Life was not that bad. We lived in the suburbs, you know. It was a pretty traditional Jewish family. You know, we had Shabbat dinner every Friday night. We all ate dinner together every night at 6 o'clock. You know, it was a typical suburb. Well, not typical, because, you know, we're all tall and my parents were really old. But other than that, typical suburban family. And inside the house, I mean, we really were just completely sarcastic to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, loved to one-up each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, and, you know, I was not the popular child, and I was teased incessantly growing up, and my mother always told me to ignore everyone, and I did, but in my head I was thinking of all the nasty things I could say to them.
Mm.
So I think that's where I got my biting wit from, but, you know, I was always funny and always looked for the joke and always saw things in a different way than other people, and then when I started doing stand-up, you know, I was surrounded by these funny people, and, you know, it was just amazing to watch them work.
Yeah.
You know, and I started in the 80s, and, you know, Joy Behar was just starting out, Susie Essman, Paula Poundstone, Ellen DeGeneres, you know, all these awesome, Lewis Black, Chris Rock, and, you know, to be able to watch these guys, I remember Larry David when he did stand-up as well, so...
Mm.
And he would get on stage, and no one would laugh but the comic. And he'd get so pissed off, throw the microphone on the ground, and walk off stage.
And then he's made a career out of that now, so that works for
exactly.
him.
Exactly. Yep.
So what is that leap of faith like, though, to get behind the mic and start trying to craft an act? I mean, I just imagine it's got to be the scariest thing in the world.
You know, people always say it's the scariest thing in the world. And for me, it's the place I feel the safest.
Hmm.
It's so odd. You know, it's like I feel the most comfortable up there. I say all the things that I can't really say, you know, face-to-face to people. I feel completely empowered. But I got to tell you, it's really when it's working well,
mm-hmm.
it's like you're the conductor of an incredible orchestra or philharmonic, you know.
Mm.
You know, you're in command, and people are... You know, it's a rhythm. It's very musical comedy, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you're in command and you're really sort of setting the tone. You're really the power there. That's why there's so few, I think, female comics. It's such a masculine. I think everyone in this country equates power with masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I think it's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, there's guys that don't want to laugh at you because you're a woman. There's women that don't want to laugh at you because you're a woman. You know, but when you're funny, it's funny. That's it.
Do you think that there have been some gains in that over the past couple of decades for women in that kind of white, straight, male world of comedy?
You know, I think so. I mean, look, I think for women in general, I think it's like every other profession.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're a nurse or a teacher, you're not going to make as much money. There is a glass ceiling, you know, it's harder. It's just harder for women in every profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true for stand-up. And I think there's less women in stand-up. You know, there's so many people that say women aren't funny. You know, the percentage of funny women to all women comics is the same as the percentage of funny men to all male comics.
Right.
It's just, there's less women, you know?
Right.
But yeah, maybe it's changed. I hope it's changed. I'm sure certain parts of the country it has not changed. But, you know, it's a sense of humor. It's like such a personal thing. It's so subjective.
Well, you talked about how once you got behind a microphone and started doing stand-up, you could say all the things that you hadn't been able to say. When did you start consciously putting your sexuality into your act? And was it a conscious decision?
It was. I was very ambiguous for many years. And it was because I was in a relationship, but I really, there was nothing really funny. I mean, it was just in a relationship, and it was the 80s. It was not, it wasn't, there was nothing funny. There was no material from it. We were like boring lesbians, you know? And I would talk a lot about my mother and my family. And then I started working in Provincetown, and I never said I was straight, and I never said I had a boyfriend, but I just didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say part of me was petrified, and I had been told by managers not to come out, and, you know, it's really scary in Hollywood, especially in the 80s and 90s. You know, that was not an easy time to come out. And then finally, you know, before I had a child in 96, actually my partner had our first child, but you know, in the mid-90s, and I had this child, and I thought, so how am I going to get on stage and, you know, do my job and not say that, you know, that I'm gay and talk about my family? Like, every comic talks about their family. Why shouldn't I talk about my family?
Right.
And I don't want my kid thinking there's anything wrong with his family,
mm-hmm.
or that we have anything to be quiet about or ashamed of. And I just, that was it. I was like, you know, too bad.
Yeah.
And I don't care where I am. I mention I'm gay, and I mention I'm a Jew.
Yeah. The two go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So, that's really interesting because it makes perfect sense why you've had this affinity and long working relationship with Rosie O'Donnell. You won two Emmys for writing and producing the Rosie O'Donnell Show. And obviously that's been a passion of hers, you know, when she came out to really show the world her family.
Right.
What did you learn most about writing for daytime? Because that's got to be an entirely different beast.
Oh, God, it's so unbelievable. You know, I got Rosie, I have to say, is an amazing person. And she, when Henry was born, my older son, she said to me, you can't go on the road. You need to be with your baby. So she actually, you know, gave me a job on her show so I could be home with my kids. She's very family oriented. And
did you do that from L.A. or New York?
No, New York. And right. She, you know, we're writing for daytime. And, you know, I'm a nightclub comic. You know, I curse. There's right. Nothing. There's no topic that is off limits. But at the same time, I was also a mom. Mm-hmm. And I was learning there are topics that are off limits. And I realized, you know, we were making this show for people like me, you know, in their, you know, 30s and 40s and that, you know, were home with their kids and gay men, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And
home with their kids.
Right. And I learned that you can be funny without being, you know, filthy. Mm-hmm. And I also knew her voice so well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it is difficult. I have to say, it is difficult writing in someone else's voice when you're so used to writing for yourself.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you enjoyed the writing aspects. I mean, even if you're writing a book, as much as being in front of the audience, or is it just depend on what's going on in your life that sometimes it's just a nice way to be in one place and not have to be in front of audiences?
You know, I have to say, when I was writing and producing, I had the most wonderful time, but I did, you know, I would still go out and perform at night.
Mm-hmm.
We had to be there at 7 in the morning, and I would call the clubs and be like, you know, they'd open at 8 or 8:30, they'd have the first spot, and I'd say, can I do the first spot? Just to, because you got to really keep doing it in order to, it's like a muscle, it's like working out, you got to keep doing it or you just go flat. But,
right.
So, I have to say, I always missed, and I worked on her show for the first two seasons, but I really missed performing. I really mm-hmm. did. And it was Alan King. I did a special with Alan King, and he said to me, you know, I used to write for the Ed Sullivan Show,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you're a performer. You can't. You have to go. And I really felt like I was ready to get out of an office and, you know, do it. And sometimes I regret it because I could have, you know, really made some good money and gotten more producing jobs. And then again, I wouldn't have done half the projects that I did since then. So,
yeah.
But I learned so much and I loved working there. I really did.
So does that mean that you would consider joining her if she does try to get a show to fill the Oprah gap, as she just said this week?
Yes, I would love that. I would love that.
Do you think there's a new space, a new generation for her again in daytime talk?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people watch her. I mean, the ratings on The View were so high when she was on The View.
Right.
You know, she...
Well, you never knew what the hell was going to happen.
I think. Right, exactly. But, you know, she definitely, she gets an audience. You mm-hmm. got it. People are curious. Whether mm-hmm. they like her or they hate her, they watch her. And she's really talented.
Yeah. Well, you definitely got a huge audience and huge critical acclaim in 2006 for your long-running off-Broadway hit show, 25 Questions for a Jewish Mother. You were nominated for a Drama Desk Award for Outstanding Solo Performance. Was the premise just to talk to a lot of Jewish mothers and see if they were like yours, since you've incorporated yours in your act for so long?
Pretty much. You know, my friend Kate Moira Ryan is a playwright, and I said to her, I want to write a one-woman show, and I want to get out of the clubs, and I don't want it to be all about me, 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 me. Of course, my new one-woman show is all about me, me, me.
Right.
But anyway.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. So she...
Enough about me. Let's talk about me.
Well, we were actually in Chicago. We were at Liz Smith's book party, and I was working in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And she was there because her partner's a literary agent. And we're talking about this, and I said... She said, get me another martini, because she is Irish. And she said, what do you talk about in your act? And I said, my mother. And I get criticized all the time. I was constantly getting criticized by the Jewish press anytime I did a TV show or anything, that I was, you know, perpetuating the stereotype of the Jewish mother. When all I was doing was literally verbatim repeating the stuff that my mother said to me
mm-hmm.
in her very lovely voice. And mm-hmm. so... we decided we were going to start interviewing Jewish mothers to see, yeah, where I fit in. Are they all like my mother? And we wrote down a bunch of questions on a cocktail napkin, and we set up a you know, some interviews with these really Orthodox Jews in Queens. And then we would leave them and, you know, ask them, do you know any other people who'd be interested? And soon, Kate was on the road with me, and we were going everywhere and interviewing Jewish mothers and asking them these 25 questions. And it was the most fascinating journey, I have to tell you. The women changed my life. I couldn't believe it. And then it became a book, and it toured for a long time. And we still do the show sometimes. And I love that show.
Yeah. What was the most shocking revelation for you in doing that show?
Oh, there were so many, but I have to say, I interviewed these very Orthodox Jewish women who, mm-hmm. I thought, you know, they all had like 9 kids, and I thought they would be just, you know, I cook and I clean and I do the laundry and when I interviewed them, they were the most educated out of all of the women, mm-hmm. which was fascinating to me. And also, one of the women had a special needs child, and the yeshiva that the kids went to could not facilitate the needs of her child. So her husband was a lawyer. He would come home from work, take care of the 5 or 6 kids they had, and she went back to school and got her master's in special ed and opened a yeshiva for special needs kids. I mean, like, they were so incredible. So there were, like, stories like that. There was this woman who survived Auschwitz that, I mean, unbelievable. And then, you know, there was a woman I met in Reno who was married to a Druid. Mm-hmm. I mean, the women were so incredible. I can't even tell you. And so diverse. And I thought they'd all be exactly the same. And they were so completely diverse.
Well, hopefully then the critics got off your back after that.
Pretty much did. We got great reviews.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean the theater critics. I mean the people who said, you know, you only stereotyping one type of Jewish woman.
And here I did the show where I did all these women, and they were all so, so completely different. There was this one Asian woman, you know, Chinese, and she converted. Mm-hmm. And she was one of my favorites. She was Orthodox. And just her story about, you know, and her mother, and I really related to her because her mother didn't tell anyone she got married, you know, and she would walk down the street and her mother's friends would be like, I have a boy for you. And she'd be like, but I'm married. And it was so much like being gay, you know, why do you have a boyfriend? Because I'm a lesbian.
Right.
You know, so there were so many different aspects of these women that I had related to.
Yeah.
And other people did not, even being Jewish. A lot of non-Jews were like, I'm not Jewish, but it was really about mother and child. It wasn't about really being Jewish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I always
did the gay thing.
Yeah, and the gay thing. Well, I mean, I always relate to your material, though I'm gay, I'm not Jewish. I couldn't be any farther from probably never knowing anyone Jewish growing up in East Tennessee. Until I moved out of that state. So I don't know if you ever play Tennessee and if you have to kind of alter your material, but.
I have played there. I don't really plan on playing there. but I have to say there were sometimes after the show, I'd have these, you know, very religious people mm-hmm. waiting for me and wanted to talk about, you know, the gay issue, which was, and I remember a specific group who were like, you know, I don't think I could, you know, disown my child for being gay after seeing this. And so many people came to see the show and then came out to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people came up to me afterwards, like grandmothers. This is my daughter and her partner. it was amazing.
Well, our visibility really changes the world. And I think that your visibility has been huge. Now, karma may be a bitch because you've talked about your mom for so many years, but I think you've just gone to the front lines to take it like a man, so to speak, mm-hmm. with your new show, Judy Gold is Mommy Queerest.
Well, we changed the name, actually.
Oh, what is the new name?
It's called It's Judy Show, My Life as a Sitcom.
Oh, there you go. All right. So it's my show.
It's Judy's show.
It's Judy's show. My life as a sitcom. All right. Yeah. Well, are you bringing that show and those materials to Zanies?
No, I'm bringing my stand-up comedy to Zanies.
You are.
Yeah, that show is a whole musical production.
Oh, that's right. There's like video screens and piano and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's really exciting. So, but now does material of being the mother of two boys and having a teenager, is that now becoming more and more incorporated in your act?
Yes, it is. And it's sad because it's tragic, not funny. So, you know, because having a teenager really sucks.
All bets are off from what I hear.
Oh, awful. It's just the worst. They're so awful. And then I realized I must have been just awful to my mother.
Yeah. But I would think you're a pretty hip mom.
You know, they won't admit it. But then Henry was on Facebook and the other day, and he goes, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. I actually just said you were pretty cool." I'm like, "Oh, that's great, Henry." Yeah, I think I am. But then they want the mom to be kind of normal, like the mothers that, you know, pick them up at school and take them to their activities. And, you know, they kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But I think they like that, you know, they get to do fun things with me. And
yeah. You know. Yeah. You've led a pretty fabulous life. It's not the norm. So
they get to
enjoy that. Well, what is on the horizon for you besides this show and coming to Chicago? I know you're performing in New York. And
Right now, I'm actually doing the Nora Ephron, Delia Ephron play, Love, Loss, and What I Wore.
Yep.
And that goes till the 25th of April, and then I come to Chicago. Mm-hmm.
Chicago.
And then my new show, it's Judy's show, My Life as a Sitcom, is going to the Williamstown Theater Festival in June.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's a great festival.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that.
That is awesome. And then maybe you'll get the phone call from Rosie O'Donnell. I think it will happen.
I am really hoping and praying.
Yeah. Well, we'll let her know. Let's all let her know.
Okay.
Hey, everybody, do not miss Judy Gold. She is performing in Chicago Thursday, April 29th and Friday, April 30th. Three shows over those 2 days at Zany's in Chicago. That's 1548 North Wells Street. And then she's going to have two shows in the Burbs because she's a Burb girl. Saturday, May 1st at Zany's in Vernon Hills, which is 230 Hawthorne Village Commons. Tickets are only $25. You must buy. There's a two-drink minimum. And for information, you can get tickets all at the zanies.com website. We'll have that linked in our notes. And hey, if you're not in the Chicago area and you listen to our show, which I love that many of you do, check out more about Judy, her schedule, appearances, her current show in New York, her appearance at the Williamstown Theater Festival, her books, CDs, everything you want to know about her at judygold.com. Judy, thanks so much, and we'll see you in Chicago.
Thank you. I can't wait to come to Chicago.
Something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. So, Kelly, it's another week. Another week not in Mexico, but the weather is sunny. And we'll just make do, my sweets.
We'll do.
We'll do? What are we going to do, be-do?
No, we'll do. We'll make do.
Maybe we should invite Sandra to come hang out with us this spring.
Bullocks.
Yeah.
Tell her we have a guest bedroom and we could slap a burger
lovely
on the grill.
Yeah.
Aw. She's going to be loved by a lot of people.
I'm sure she is. I'd like her to come out. Now she needs to go make that lesbian comedy with Meryl Streep.
She might. She very well might.
That's what I would do. I would say, screw you men. No offense to any of the gay men listening. Or straight men who are just curious and listening to us. But I would just say, screw men for a while. And she should just really get into practice of that girl-on-girl kissing that she was doing. And just go all out, lesbo. Hey, Anna Paquin did it this week. She said she was a bisexual, and she's marrying some dude, but she could still be bisexual.
Oh, for crying! Great.
Why you gotta have some hate for the bisexuals?
I don't at all.
Okay,
I don't at all.
Because we'll get lots of comments.
I know. I just thought of that. I don't at all. No, I don't at all.
So you don't think she can be bisexual and be marrying a dude?
What do you do with that? Is what I was wondering. What do you do
with
it?
You just honor the fact that you've loved women in your life and that you could have fallen in love with a woman.
Don't
or
teach
a man
me on the program. Teach me privately. Don't teach me on your program in a public way. Don't slap me around publicly.
This is what we do.
You
call me on my shit and I teach you.
See,
and
there, this is like the bird's eye view of our relationship.
This is the
right
bird's
here
eye view.
We should die. You shouldn't even post. We shouldn't post this
because it's way too private. It's way too private. You know, we're just gonna
wrap
this one.
I respect the honoring of the I'm saying I I'm gonna shut up.
Okay.
I love that she came out bi.
There you go. Bye. And when I mean bye, I say B-Y-E bye. All right, everybody.
Birdie.
We say bye-bye.
Birdie.
We say bye-bye. And have a wonderful week of spring.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.